Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
What is artificial intelligence? By this, I don't mean singularity, superintelligence. That is way off, not worth talking about. I'm talking about the use of machine learning technologies in a single domain with a large amount of training data reaching superhuman performance.
Kai-Fu Lee is one of China's most influential tech figures and venture capitalists. He spoke to us about artificial intelligence at our tech conference DLive in November.
Think about Amazon taking a lot of clicks and buys, turning it into knowing what you will buy, knowing what you will buy more than you know yourself.
From search results to music playlists to digital assistants like Siri and Alexa, AI is more embedded in our everyday lives than ever before. But it's by no means universal, and it's not good at everything. At least, not yet.
So the current state of the art AI is something called narrow AI.
Dr. IP Park is the president of LG. I spoke to him in January.
The current AI can do something extremely well in narrow area. So it can play chess, it can beat chess champion. You can play a good game. But if you ask that chess player game to, let's say, go for shopping for you, it's not going to do that because it's so narrowly focused. The AI field has to sort of evolve into a general AI. That's where real intelligence will come in.
As big data feeds the advancement of machine learning and other AI technologies, their value in business is surging. As an industry, AI is expected to generate trillions in additional wealth for the world over the next decade. Companies from TD Bank to Apple have expanded their C-suites to include chief AI officers, tasked with understanding the benefits and biases it can bring to a business. Now the U.S. is boosting spending on AI-related research in what's seen as a move to counter China's growing prowess in the field. From the Wall Street Journal, this is The Future of Everything. I'm Jennifer Strong.
History shows when there's great new technology inventions, physical infrastructure and societal infrastructure has to change.
Ginni Rometty is the chief executive of IBM. She says companies need to understand how AI can augment their strategies or risk being left behind. She spoke with the Wall Street Journal's editor-in-chief, Matt Murray, at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland.
When you talk about AI, when you think about it, what does it mean to you? Explain to us what AI is, what it isn't. Do people understand fully what's coming our way? Do they misunderstand? How do you define it? Help us think about it.
I think of it as simply as a way to make each of us better. I do think if it boils down to one thing, it's about making better decisions. And that is, in fact, it's one of our values that we've really consciously stated that the purpose of these technologies is to augment man, not replace man. And I think those of us that build them have a lot to do with that and what it is. So I think that, so when I think of it, and that's why actually for business, we'll kind of go between why do people feel like you just described, and for what I see in clients, what is everyone doing with AI? Because I'm actually starting to see much greater deployment now, and I can talk about what people learned and what didn't go so well and what has gone well. But basically, if you kind of think back in time, go back kind of two eras of IT, and there was a big advantage given to processing, and all our back offices changed, yours included, all changed. Then there's been this most recent era, I think everybody would talk about networking, the platforms all came up. And now people are going to compete on expertise. And so this is one way to help build expertise, not just in a company, but a process and anything. So that's what I think of it as.
Client-facing expertise or internal expertise?
Both. And that's a really important point, actually. The first instantiation of most AI today is all customer service. So every client I've met with here and those that are far ahead have gone well beyond that. Those beginning, they always say, what's the first area? What's everybody doing? And I always tell them the very first thing is customer service. The sleeper area, which is a way to get a whole company to understand AI, is HR. And most people are very surprised about that, right? That's a way. But I want to, can I just park that for a sec?
Yeah, well,
So back to your point of then why.
Most people don't even think of HR having I, let alone.
Oh, that isn't, I feel differently about mine. I actually think most companies would tell you they've underinvested in that area by far, right? And so it can actually be an area that, and it's going to be related to the other topic you said. Why do people feel right now this anxiety?
Yeah.
At least that's what you feel in the air here. And I think there's two reasons. One is, I would call it a trust headwind. And then the second reason is, I said it's a jobs crisis, but I think I would be better to reframe it as it's a large issue of inclusivity or people feeling left behind in the future. So if I could just maybe just talk a little bit more about each one of them. On the trust headwind, I think that's out there, you've got people, they know all this data is there. They know there's personal data out there, this concern about what is it going to be used for? Is it going to be replaced? Is it unfair advantage against me? And I feel very strongly there's two things that have to happen on trust. One is, not just an IT company, Matt, every company should be clear what their, really clear what their principles are about this data, and then be willing to be audited and accountable to them. But this goes back, because we've been at AI a long time. Actually, it was a year before I was born. It was some of the beginning of the work was done.
Yeah,
okay. It's been a very long time. But it's gone through its winters and come back out. But our principles are, first one is, what we're going to do, the purpose of AI and these new technologies is to augment man. I said that one. Second one is really clear that data belongs to its owner and its insights belong to the owner. Third thing is it's got to be explainable and transparent, all these technologies. So
can I ask you what
regulation I was going to talk about?
You might be headed where I was going then, but that makes sense. But I think that when you hear that from IBM, IBM's got a view, Facebook has a view, Microsoft has a view, the views might be good or bad. You know, I mean, Kai-Fu Lee was here, and one of the things he talks about, as you know, in his book is that part of the Chinese advantage that he sees is data. And China has a model, and the China model is they've got your data, they do all kinds of things with the data. Europe has a different model with the GDPR, and again, this year I think the feeling is that Europe may miss out on technology because of that. I'm not sure that the United States yet has a clear common standard. And
yeah.
I'm not sure if the government needs to set one or if companies need to do it together, but from company to company and interaction to interaction, I think that's part of the anxiety. We don't know how everybody feels.
Yeah, I think you're conflating two different things that don't necessarily have to be conflated. One is that you must have massive amounts of AI, data to have AI. Because the most interesting things we are working on now, and it's more than just working on, is things like one-shot learning, where it is not massive amounts of data. And so that is where the field is heading, that it will not be just massive amounts.
What's an example of
Very simple, yes, here's one that we're working on right now. I'm an insurance company, and because the biggest inhibitor of getting AI in is the training. It's, I mean, 85% of any effort a client does is on getting the data and getting it ready. It's not on the actual algorithms. And so I'm doing claims for roofs, hail coming down on roofs, right? I have all my pictures of roofs done. I have to train roof after roof after roof. One-shot learning would be, this roof's been damaged by hail. I show a picture of one roof with hail on it, and now it knows what all the other kind of roofs could look like if they had hail on them. And that's a real one we're working on with an insurance company. That's one-shot learning versus I got to retrain on what does hail look like on every different kind of structure that there could be. And that to me is a huge, huge barrier removed if you can do that. You will get widespread AI in business because why? Time to value and cost will be way less to do it. So that's why I wouldn't necessarily, I understand that argument,
yeah.
But I do think one that we do have to come together on is when you think about, well, you say it's easy for all of us to say our principles. By the way, everyone has not been clear what their principles are, but particularly when it comes to the consumer, I do think there needs to be very precise regulation. Because my big fear, one of the things I've talked about here is, if all governments are feeling pressure to do something on this, and it's particularly on consumer privacy. And so what is, to me, common sense but targeted regulation would be, for a consumer, you should be able to know what data is being collected, opt out, get it removed, see what you have as a minimum, right? And the simple points. There should be liability for illegal things, right? I think there should be and get to agreement on those things, because otherwise my biggest fear is governments, without understanding all this, will go to overboard and actually really really impact the digital economy.
Is there a prospect of the kind of regulation you're talking about in the United States right now? It's very hard to know if it's really going to come together in that way.
Yeah, no, I think there is some prospect of that, right? Because in it's born of people hearing all different other kind that has unintended consequences. So I just, when you put those two things together about, you know, is one country ahead because it has all the data, I don't necessarily believe this is going to be a race about who has necessarily just all the data.
You've said 100% of jobs are going to be changed in the not very distant future, in the
yeah.
next, from AI. So, and you're an optimist, that's clear. But when you talk about the things, I think one of the things that at least I hear is there's an inexorable logic to some of these things. You start as processes, but obviously when you talk about something like extending the roof thing, that does have implications. So there's going to be, I assume, a lot of job displacement,
yeah.
New jobs that come into being that we don't know. And even for those of us who don't have our jobs gone, the jobs change a lot. So really, can you talk a little bit about because you've said it's a very dramatic change
yeah.
in how we do work coming that will have big ramifications.
Yeah, this has been my biggest topic to want to keep coming. Actually, I brought this up at Davos. This is my third year on this topic. First off, because the first couple of years everybody was, what percentage is going to change? And I said, it doesn't really matter, to be honest. I mean, technology's changed jobs every area you've looked. But this time it's 100%, and it's faster. And so if it's 100%, and this is what I believe leads to one of these biggest issues, I've said all different ways, skills is the issue of our time, because now you've got generations of people working, and their job is changing. And so I may be 50 years old, 60 years, in my job, what I did or what I did is now going to be paid less, and I've got to add another skill to it. That's, to me, this big issue. So if you believe, which I do really believe that, we are going to leave people behind. Like in the U.S., Matt, you cannot have a country where two sides have all the benefits of this technology. History shows when there's great new technology inventions, the structure of physical infrastructure and societal infrastructure has to change. It wasn't maybe so overt. It's always like when you can look back, it's always clear. And
historically, it took longer. There were longer periods of time
to adjust, right?
Here,
yeah. I really think for us, one of the biggest things is, so you can't leave everyone, a big swath of society, feeling disenfranchised and left behind. And that's potentially what's in front of us or right in front of us in some cases. So because, for one, look, all of us, we get 7,000 resumes a day. We can hire the people we need in IBM. However, the whole world doesn't have university degrees. The whole world does not have PhDs. And so you look at what caused Brexit, what caused some of this unrest. It's issues of people saying, hey, look, my future, I'm not sure this looks much better out here. So what's going to, in this technology, any of these, they're not going to make it easier for me. So what I'm a really strong proponent of is that this won't be solved by government, but business and government together can make a huge dent, but you got to believe a couple things. You have to believe some different paradigms, that you'll hire people, appropriate jobs, on skill versus diplomas or degrees. Okay, now I have a whole company of university and PhDs, but there are jobs that can be done different ways. You have to believe that there are different pathways to get a good paying job other than a college degree. We've made some inroads, and I think other companies have, and there's great hope for this. And I'm not just optimistic, I'm an optimist based on fact. And so, so you have to have different pathways, and I think you have to remove a stigma that it is a bad thing to be. People say blue collar, white collar. We come up with this title, new collar, meaning no problem. You don't have to have a university degree. You can have these contemporary skills, and you could be a cyber expert, not necessarily with a university degree. So a couple ideas I would share. One of them would be all of us do reskilling. I do $500 million a year, so that goes without saying. Any company, I should prepare you to be employable. I don't guarantee employment, but I should prepare you to be employable. That should be a commitment.
How do you do it at IBM? I mean, do you have a lot more mandatory training and reskilling even within the company than you?
Yes, and I talk a lot with our clients on this. One of the things is, and I believe everyone should do this, first off, we used to do skill planning once a year. We do it every quarter now. We also go through what skills are in surplus in the market and what skills are, you know, leading edge skills or lagging. And everyone knows where their skills fall on that matrix. And you know that if you're in surplus in a skill that is lagging, you got to get yourself to another area. this idea that people don't need to be left behind. No, and by the way, age doesn't matter. Our data proves it. We've retrained the whole workforce. It is irrespective of age, their ability to move forward into these new areas.
This goes to the anxiety point a bit, but only a bit. How many companies and customers, you work with all kinds of companies of all sizes, get AI, get what it is? What's the gap between the perception of what it is and the reality of what it can mean on the ground for your business? Are they are they informed, or are we just sort of filled with sci-fi images that aren't accurate?
Well, I think it's a shame that some of the rhetoric is about how bad it could be. Like any technology, it can do great things, and it can be used for challenging things. And so this is why I think it's really important that we all bring it in safely into the world, right? And that's true with any kind of technology. So when you think of AI, what you hear on one end is what people call general AI, like could imitate a human, actually imitate a human. Most of the AI you know today, people would call narrow AI. It learns to do one thing in one domain. That's kind of the two spectrums. That's where we're at today. But we're moving into something called broad AI. And this is where we're doing a lot of work, which says, you know, I knew how to do one thing in a domain, I can learn the next adjacent thing. And that would be, as that example, like I was just talking about the roofs and the hail, right? I know roofs, I've seen hail, okay, now I can see wind damage. I can learn that myself. And so it's an adjacent task I learn. And that is gonna make it far more valuable as well. So, but you're still, that idea that equal to human is decades, if at all, away here still. So it's a shame because it causes fear mongering, right, about amongst people at that other end. So you asked, where are people today? We've done, I think last count, we try to count them, 25,000 engagements. And so I kind of feel we've gone through a lot of arrows and learned a lot of lessons learned about where clients are. And I would say that a lot of clients are at a stage where they have random acts of digital and AI are all over. And if there's clients in the room, many identify with that thought. And it's this belief that, God, I can't get left behind. I better try it. And I've got a million flowers blooming. And their number one issue is they can't scale. And they can't necessarily prove that the same data was used in the same places into this model. You know, I'm a bank. Do I know when I made that decision what the model looked like and the algorithms? And so they're kind of hitting that roadblock. So on the other hand, I've seen clients now go from process to process. And again, they start with customer service, and customer service, HR, then any kind of knowledge worker that needs expertise, it would be the next thing that I see rolling through. But here would be the lessons learned. First one I mentioned, people spend 85% of their time on trying to get the data, just find data that they want to use to train. So most people, there's kind of a funny saying, you can't have AI without IA. You can't have AI without an information architecture, okay? Boring as it sounds, but if you don't kind of get this put together, this is a long road. Second one, some of the early mistakes, if you just try to put AI in and you don't rethink how you're gonna do your work. We learned that early on with doctors. If you try to give them a tool and say, no, you keep doing everything you're doing, add this to what you're doing. They're like, do you realize I see a patient 8 minutes, okay? And this is not gonna be able to be added here. So when we rethink how they do their work, that's the second thing people had to get onto, was rethink how they did their work. The third thing is you got to be able to explain the AI, and it can't be a black box. Bias. So we just released a tool that you could take anybody's AI and put it through that looks for bias. Doesn't have to be Watson, can be anything. Google, TensorFlow, put it through, and it can show you where it has potential bias.
Bias meaning?
Because without telling it what bias is, it's looking for, well, why is this always happening with this set of attributes? Like, so why did you always give this group an increase and not this group? So it's and you could also tell it, look for gender, look for this, look, but you can also let it say what looks like potential bias to you. You need these kind of tools, right? So you've got to, that's the third element I've seen.
This is what I think is interesting, particularly with your experience there, which is we think of what, I mean, and I mean this, you know, we have these moments where it bursts into the consciousness, you know, Google wins the game of Go or Watson wins chess. But part of your experience with Watson has been this sort of accumulation of knowledge, experience, learning, adding functionality. It's really kind of a constant.
It is. And that's a, you know, at CES, we when you look at what's next on these things, can I end on what's next maybe, if that's okay? It's a little bit related. The idea of what you would have seen, we've been working on something with Watson called Debater. And we let it interact with everybody. I know you might not like what it's going to, I'm going to tell you, it's able to do is debate and argument, you know.
More debate in our society.
Well, just think, if you talk to any home device and talk to it for 4 minutes, what does it do back at 4 minutes? Okay, so what this next level is being able to teach that it can actually comprehend, listen, comprehend, and then go search and make an argument. And so the first day we were there, the argument was, should gambling be legalized, you know, not legalized or not legal in Las Vegas? So we picked some interesting topics every day the pro and the con argument. That's one of the things next. One of the next other things we're working on right now, we had just announced a cooperation with the Michael J. Fox Foundation on Parkinson's, but we've already done the work. It's an idea that there's something called deep data coming out there, and this is one estimate that less than 1% of all the data in the world is actually collected and used. Less than 1% is collected and used. And so what we've been working on with sensors on your fingernails that they really can get the slightest motions, and its early ability to predict Parkinson's because of it, and the AI we've built to do it, as well as schizophrenia. So I think this is the idea of deep data, meaning, well, think about it. Nobody's collecting the vibrations off of your fingernails right now. So it's massive when you think of that amount of data. Even what we're doing at the weather company now, we just announced new weather prediction that an hour in advance, because we are now able to say we can get, I won't teach you about weather forecasting. That's a really interesting topic, to be honest. But every 3 kilometers, we can now accurately get the weather. And we're spoiled in the U.S. of the ability, the models that are in the U.S., they do not exist around the rest of the world. They do now with what we just did. But you could predict turbulence an hour in advance. I mean, just think how many times you're on an airplane when someone says, I'm going to look for smoother air, you know, and this idea. But that has repercussions. Weather's the number one thing that impacts it's the number one external factor that impacts the economy is weather. And so the ability of what that has to do with hospitals, with disease, with forecasting for retailers, all of which you get better. That's what I call deep data, though. When we're collecting off of an airplane every 5 seconds, or the barometric reading off of your cell phone, if it can do it, we're now ingesting those with your permission. We're ingesting those. That's deep data. So this idea of deep data and where we're heading with things like the debater is this idea of broad data, or the ability to, hey, I've learned one task here, I'm going to jump over and learn another without much more new data, is where the future goes.
Great. There's a lot to chew on. Ginny, thank you very
much. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
IBM's Ginny Rometty and The Wall Street Journal's Editor-in-Chief, Matt Murray. The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Anthony Green with help from Rebecca Doe Weinman and George Downs. Stan Parrish is the Editor-in-Chief of The Future of Everything. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong.